Welcome to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 91, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have a full house of returning guests.
Hi, Marcia from Encina.
I'm Tom from La Crescenta.
This is Malik B. from Winnetka.
David from Hollywood.
And Allison from Tarzana.
All right. In the news this week, we have the CW pushed back the return of in January of The Ringer and 90210 for encore airings of their new show called Remodeled. And I guess they're assuming that show is going to have such high ratings that the other shows don't need to air. I don't know, but okay. I guess also that means The Ringer and 90210 aren't getting that great of ratings if they're pushing them back.
I can't imagine The Ringer has any kind of ratings at all, really.
One of the writers for reviews who adores Sarah Michelle says he can't watch it anymore. he went even further than he would have just because of her, and he says it hurts him too much.
Personally, I love Ringer, but for all the wrong reasons.
Oh, the same reason you love the movie 300.
Exactly.
I'm slogging through it.
All right. The other piece of news I have is that USA has pushed back the premiere of Common Law, which was supposed to air in January. For some reason, they decided to do, what is that show in the Hamptons? What is that show called?
Oh, Royal Pains.
They decided to put Royal Pains in its place, and Common Law is not going to premiere till the summer, which is very disappointing because I was really looking forward to it.
What I read is that they're thinking that Common Law's ratings will be better in the summer.
I get it, but I don't know, but I was looking forward to the show with all the ads and stuff. But anyway, it's a USA show, so usually I give them a shot, unless they have goofy-looking blondes in them. this week we're going to be on the timer, because we have a lot of shows, which is really surprising. But I think this is the last week we're going to have a lot of shows before the new year. So, saying that, that means we have to crank through these. First up, we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time.
I thought this was the best episode of the lot so far. At least it was my favorite, because it had a good mix of backstory in fairy tale world and a present day through line in Storybrooke.
I really like Prince Charming, except that wig was really ugly. But I really like Prince Charming.
I think it had everything but the price tag hanging on.
So, what'd you think?
Well, this was my first time watching the show. I'd heard a little bit about the premise of it, but I got to see it in action, which I thought was kind of cool. But I will say that I thought if they're going to be a show that does a lot of looking at medieval times, they should do it a little better.
Right.
That piece of it seemed kind of cheesy to me.
Oh, you mean like the budget that they spent? Well, it's not supposed to be medieval times. It's fairy tale language, which is a little different.
I think he means the language they're using is not the language that you would expect in the old stories.
The olden times.
Too contemporary.
It's very contemporary language. And that it's kind of like looking backwards, but with our own ears, rather than the way you would expect them to talk. And I don't mean these and thous, but just the words, the sentences, the way they react to things. It doesn't seem to be that you would pick it up and find it in an old world.
It's an interesting comment. That's not quite what I was getting at. I think that's definitely a valid point as well. When I say do it better, one thing, so like for the fight scene, for example, when he kills the guy, I could stage that fight like 3 minutes.
That was a cheesy looking fight scene.
just some of the reality of that time didn't seem equal to the reality of present day.
Well, there was a lot of green screening.
I think the production value just in the story, in the flashbacks, they just need to up the production value.
Right.
Because it looks cheesy. Like, this doesn't look like the highest rated new drama on TV, which it is. Right. It's like, start putting some more money in the production.
We're still in the first few episodes. They don't know it's a hit yet. You know what I'm saying? They haven't been given
more
money yet.
Can it also be that they're aiming, really, I think they're aiming the show at children and families. They're not really aiming it at us.
I think they're aiming at women.
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're not?
It's clearly aimed at a younger audience. I mean, it's Disney, so, you know, that's really their target.
Which might be why it's not as violent or as really good for some of the fight scenes, because maybe they don't want it to be a little more imaginary.
Let's get to the story. So, for story-wise, what'd you guys think?
I think they're going too fast with the Prince Charming story. If they're supposed to be a part and they're the reason everyone's a part, why are they all of a sudden being such a major part of the story? Well, that's my feeling.
But then they broke them apart at the end of the episode, so...
I just think that there's so much more out there that they should have been doing than just little dribs and drabs of this storyline. I think they should really be more like a B or a C story, while everyone else is the A stories.
When they killed the real prince in the flashback, I'm like, okay, you guys have cojones.
Yeah, because I thought that they killed the real prince. Yeah.
Well, they did kill the real prince. Yeah. But the long lost twin brother thing, they need to obviously just to say, oh, this farmer's widow just happens to have a son. It looks just there's got to be more to it than that.
Well, no, they said they were twin brothers.
Okay.
They said they were twin brothers, and Rumpelstiltskin bought one of the brothers to give to the king. So neither one of them were actually the son of the king.
I wish they'd or I guess we're going to find out who his real parents are.
Well, we met his mother.
But still, well, I don't know.
But that's the point, is that it should be dragged out. It shouldn't be all these answers, 1, 2, 3. I want it to drag out.
That's usually not what I want, but okay.
I think they need to start moving things in storybook a little bit faster.
Yes.
Well, I'm getting the impression that it's not thought out very well. Like, for instance, when we first met the prince, you know, going down that road when when Snow White jumped him, he just seemed to give the impression that he'd been prince for quite a while. He had, you know, all these sense of responsibility and princeliness and all of that. And then we find out, well, actually, he's been prince for 5 minutes. And, you know, all of that happened just, you know, immediately before he met her. And, I mean, he should be still very farm boyish, and we don't get any sense of that. So I'm getting the impression that, oh, they just came up with this idea five minutes before they wrote it. And so I'm just getting this feeling like they're just kind of throwing these things out and seeing what sticks, rather than actually having formulated this complex storyline. So that's my problem with it, really.
I think
they're just throwing a lot of things together.
I think that's a good point, but remember, he did slay a dragon after only being a prince for a day, too.
Because he's a clever farmer's son.
A combination of luck and also Rumpelstiltskin's magic working, because he did promise him, yeah, he'll slay a dragon, and so that's, you know, his thing.
All right. I still like the show. I mean, we were saying all the negative.
Oh, yeah.
It's like we're all negative Nancy on here, but I really like the show.
I like the show, and I want to love it.
So basically, we're saying thumbs up of all the fairy tale shows that are out there, meaning two.
All two of them?
All two of them. This one is my favorite. All right. Next up, let's talk about Dexter. And this week's episode was the follow-up after they did the big reveal that Edward James Olmos was all in Colin Hanks' head. So they pull the Fight Club move. And I was okay with it because I didn't figure it out until you told me, Allison. So some people were really mad about it because they figured it out early. And so they were mad that it took Dexter so long to figure it out. But this week's episode, whatever, if you hate it, love it. Now all has been revealed. Everybody knows what's going on. Dexter definitely knows. Only thing I was upset about was, okay, so Dexter gets locked into this basement that has absolutely no escape, and it takes him 5 seconds to escape. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, he took this hole, because there was like this hole in the church. He takes this big concrete slab, and he closes the door, and he puts the big concrete slab over the door, so there's no way that Dexter can get out. So after his great escape, then the story, I think, kind of takes off in a good direction, because now Dexter is determined to kill Colin Hanks because he's been duped, versus his normal motive, which is, I must kill serial killers. But now he feels obsessed about it, even though Colin Hanks' new plan is to let disease kill a lot of people. And I like the fact that his father, as his passenger, is like, look, this has gotten bigger than normal. You need to tell somebody. Because a lot of times, he figures out the case, he keeps it secret so he can kill the guy. But in this particular instance, he hasn't found the guy. And if everybody's not looking for him, a lot of people could die. So his whole obsession thing kind of has to take a backseat. And I like, it's like the episode ends with him calling 911 and telling
from his own phone. Do people not know that 911 can get
That's
they can, they can trace.
Yeah, that is true.
That's just a minor part of what... There were so many things in this episode that lacked logic. And the whole episode, to be honest with you, drove me crazy. Because there was one thing after the other that just made me scream at the television. What are you thinking? What is going on? That doesn't make sense. And it just... It was like this chain of what are you kidding me? Well, just one after the other, one after the other.
You mean like his recruitment of
it went off the deep end. To be honest with you, this was like a Cirque du Soleil of shark jumping.
okay, that was actually good. We got to keep that one going.
It's just nuts.
Part of the problem is nuts. Part of the problem is that we've gone from Dexter going after a serial killer to a person with split personality disorder, where half the guy doesn't want to do it and the other half does. So now we've gone from someone who's just evil to someone who's out of his mind, and Dexter should not be looking at him through the same normal eyes. Calling 911, yes, his light passenger told him he should have done that a long time ago, because as soon as he knew the guy was nuts, his ego should have taken a back seat and let the professionals take care of it, because the guy is nuts. Killing him the normal way he does isn't going to make anything better, because the guy's out of his mind. He's not evil.
That's
true. He just keeps pursuing this. I mean, to go to all these lengths to hide evidence.
Yes, yeah.
In this ridiculous, circuitous fashion so that the police can't find him was just completely insane.
Well, I like the
and
fact...
And then they had things going on, like, for instance, just the way that they had Colin Hanks's character, Travis, finding the girl. I mean, like, I'm before Dexter, before the police, before anybody, and I'm thinking, how did he locate her even before Dexter did? I mean, what did he manage to put? Serial killer GPS on her?
No. What's
even
worse?
Where she lived, much less where she went for the weekend.
That's true. He shouldn't have known that. Because they picked her up off the street. And, like, they would have had her ID and would have known her house, because assuming when they took her, they could have her driver's license. But how would he know that she was on her boyfriend's boat? Like,
exactly.
That's crazy.
And I don't know. Well, I'm watching that scene and I'm thinking, why are you on the boat so calm, so cool, and with liquor? Why aren't you out of the area? Why aren't you out of the state? Why aren't you somewhere else until they catch the crazy guy?
Well, I mean, at least
she
wasn't
too traumatized.
Calm.
She wasn't traumatized. I'd be damn traumatized. And
I would be with people.
Yes.
She was not with people. Yeah, that's true.
It was written badly. But I think that's what the issue is right now, is Dexter has always been really, really good. Last year, some people had issues with it. This year, I saw great. I saw crap. And I'm afraid that this last one, it would have been one that I would have fast-forwarded through if I could have.
And how does Travis know how to pilot a yacht all of a sudden? Did he take yachting lessons when we weren't looking?
Oh, please. We all watch enough television.
It was crazy.
All right, so you guys did not like Dexter. I will take that.
We were disappointed.
Disappointed, yes.
I had problems with a couple of things. I did like the fact that this is the first time he actually has kind of surrendered to, I can't catch this guy, and I need help. So I like that. But I can see your points. I'm not going to argue with you on it, but I just didn't... I don't think I had as many problems as you guys did about
we
the
still
episode.
Watched it, and I'll watch it next week. I just want that out there. It may not be what I fell in love with. It may not be the show I fell in love with, but you know what? I'm still married to it.
Okay. All right. Next up.
Are you describing the show or a marriage?
Well, sometimes the show is a marriage. All right. And we got to wrap it up, because otherwise I'll get kicked off.
Yeah. Next up, let's talk about Homeland.
I love this show. I think it is hands down the best new drama of this season. And I hope they are thusly rewarded next year at the Emmys. The writing's been crackerjack. The acting's been great. I know you didn't like Claire Danes initially, but I think she's perfect, because she is supposed to be kind of annoying and kind of unlikable.
Yeah, she
and
is.
She plays that well, because she's got a very tenuous hold on her sanity, among other things.
Yeah. Well, I was actually wondering when she gets hurt in that explosion, and then she wakes up, I was like, she hadn't had her meds.
She hasn't had her meds.
And nobody knows to
and
give her her meds.
Bingo. Bingo.
Oh, man. And you could see that. You could see that in her, the way she was playing it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and they don't have to call it out for you.
She's barely holding on.
Yeah, she played it nice and manic.
Right.
What are her meds?
She has some antipsychotics. She's crazy, but nobody knows it because
except for her sister.
Except for her sister, because if they knew it, she wouldn't be able to be part of the CIA. So she, her manic depression or manic whatever she has, she has to take a pill every day. She cannot miss it. And so she got blown up in this week's episode. And so she was unconscious for we don't know how long. And nobody knows to give her her meds.
But she did.
Although her sister was there in the hospital, they showed that.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so the thing is, how do you?
I mean, she can't give her anything while she's unconscious. But you know, her sister's there.
Yeah. Now I don't believe that the terrorist's son was really the terrorist's son. This was all a plot, and here he is now with the vice president wanting him to run for government office.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he wants. And, you know, I'm still vacillating between, is Brody a bad guy, or is he now playing the terrorist cell against themselves?
I think he drank the Kool-Aid the second time.
I think Brody's on his own side, though.
Yeah. But I mean,
that's true to some extent, but I do think that he fell for it. And yes, I agree with you. I don't think that the terrorist's son was the terrorist's
son.
No, it was just some guy.
What I'm looking at is he fell for it, yes, but I think once Walker, he found out that they had lied to him about that, I think now he's going to keep playing along, but he's not sure which side he's on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's on his side.
Yep.
Well, but the thing is he's also a master manipulator because...
Oh, the way he played
his wife. Well, the way he played his wife to get his... Because he needed his wife to let him run for office.
Yes.
And she said absolutely no.
So what did she do? He sends her ex-lover,
right,
his former best friend in.
Makes
this grand speech about, I don't hold it against you, but I need this favor
from
you.
I didn't understand why his friend did not see the strings.
Oh, because his friend feels so freaking guilty.
Well, that's true. Yeah, he needed that forgiveness. You're right. His friend needed him to forgive him, so he didn't see the manipulation going on. But the wife took 5 seconds. She was like...
She totally saw through.
She was like, oh, he sent you...
How dumb are you?
Yeah.
But she's still feeling guilty, too. It's brilliant.
Right. And he totally played them. And the thing is... You can tell when he came up with that plan. Because after his wife says no, he sits on the couch and he just like is meditating. He is staring into nothing for like a couple of hours. And then his wife comes home and he kind of snaps out of it and then he has his plan. And then he literally goes and executes his plan and totally gets everybody doing exactly what he wants. And the thing that tripped me out is he totally, Claire Danes' character is called
Carrie.
He manipulated her.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yes, he did.
He was
because
like,
she thought she was getting a booty call.
Well, she thought that too.
She thought she was getting a booty call.
But not only that, he wanted to scope out her house. So when she's like, "Where do you want to meet someone?" Blah blah. He's like, "Oh no, I'll come by your house." He tells her that, so she thinks that something's happened. You know, there's going to be sex
booty
or whatever. So she doesn't think I shouldn't let this guy into my house. She's thinking, I'm going to get some action. Because
she's feeling guilty, too.
Right. And so he gets over there, and what does he do? He spends the whole time
looking
at her house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this person you think is a terrorist now knows where you live. He has now scoped out your house. What kind of CIA agent are you?
The person you thought was a terrorist.
That's true. She doesn't think he's a terrorist anymore, but oh, man.
I don't know what happened before he came back, Brody came back, but she... is losing it. I mean, daily she's getting worse, and things are getting more out of control.
Right.
So you know, in some ways, we're actually feeling a little more. I'm feeling a little more sympathetic to her. You know, she's being disappointed by Brody not liking her or not. You know.
Well, the thing that's weird is she kind of fell for him because she
watched
she watched him for so long. She became obsessed with him,
right.
And then that turned into some
but
weird kind
but
of.
That's
feeling.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
She
just
is
shows
not
how crazy
dealing
she is.
With reality.
Right.
And we still have the question: who is the mole in the CIA? I think it's somebody we haven't even seen. Some background person. They
and
want
the
you
thing
to
is,
think
I
it's this one. They want you to think it's that one.
Say it again, Allison.
I have my own theories of who the mole is, and I have this terrible, terrible feeling of who it is.
You're going to say Saul? I threw out
no,
Saul
I
last
think it's
week.
No, I think it's the guy who's running for for president. I think it's him.
The
that makes no sense.
Yeah, I know, but
I
still think it's
I really
him.
Think they've thrown a few little weird visual...
I think they're setting up Saul to be... Yeah, I think it's Saul.
I think it would be such a bizarre person to be the mole, but it... They keep throwing these little things out, you know, periodically, and I think he's been the perfect person to be in certain places at certain times and know certain things.
He's known everything. Everything
he's
that
known
the,
everything. Yeah. And he's been in the right place at the right time at critical moments.
He's a $5 bet on this one. He's going to be the red herring. He's the one that they're going to leave it at the end of the series, of this season. But it's not him.
I'd be very disappointed if it's somebody brand new. I think it's got to be somebody we've seen.
It's Jack Bauer's wife.
That actually wasn't the original mole in 24.
He's being...
I know. I thought he was... I understand that. But I was like, I thought you were like saying, oh, it's Jack Bauer's partner who was the mole. I thought you were going to go with that. But no. Anyway. All right. Wrapping that up. We're all very obviously excited about this show. Thumbs up. Next up, we want to talk about Boardwalk Empire, which we haven't done ever. Well, not ever, but since it started back up, and we have enough people to talk about it, sans me, because I haven't seen it.
The short version of this last week's episode is, wow, wow, ew!
Everything you suspected about Jimmy Darmody and his mom... Ew. Was true, and then some.
And I didn't need to see that.
But they didn't,
they
did
didn't,
you notice.
They didn't go too far.
Thank God for blurry. And for those who don't know what we're talking about...
Don't worry about us. Keep talking.
There's always been a question as to Jimmy's mother being just a little too affectionate.
Familiar with him.
And there was a scene last year when he was meeting the Commodore's business partners... And his mom kissed him on the lips and then left the room. And they looked kind of funny. And he said, it's something she does. And then this past week, we found out one time she went a little too far. And that's why he went into the military. That's why he left Princeton. He had
They've left hints all over the place. I mean, things like her talking about how she would kiss him on his weenie things like that just left you completely creeped
and
out.
Also the rivalry between
and
mom
what?
And the late wife,
yes. Angela, yeah, poor, and she doesn't care that Angela's dead.
She's
ecstatic, and I can see that Jimmy is scared to death to let his son be raised by her. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely, he doesn't care that Angela was killed with a woman. He's worried that she was killed. He loved her, and now he's got to figure out how to get his son away from his mother.
I thought the look on the guy with half his face blown off,
yes,
the vet,
Richard.
When Richard found out that Angela was dead, oh, just the look of heartbreak on his face.
Absolutely.
Okay, here's what I want to know. Where do we go from here? Do you think Darmody will go back to Nucky begging for forgiveness to get revenge against...
I think there's a good strong chance of that because Nucky, you know, when you get back to the very core of it, he was a surrogate father,
yep,
to Jimmy. And Jimmy has had all the pins pulled out from under him at this point. He has really nothing left. And the only chance he has of having any kind of support system at this point is to kind of go crawling back to Nucky and hope he takes him.
Now, please, somebody remind me, because Jimmy killed the Commodore, too, and with his,
yep,
mother's urging.
Yes, yes.
I don't know how to explain that, because he's not someone who can just disappear.
But the question was, who was it, I forget, who was cleaning up the blood afterwards?
That was Richard.
What I thought.
That was Richard.
Okay, so I do... It is going to be interesting how they're going to go back, because now you also have Nucky's lady, Margaret.
Margaret.
Who, ooh, is getting very religious fever.
Oh, yeah.
And afraid that the reason that her daughter has polio...
is God's...
going after her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the idea that the kid has polio, I'm thinking in those days, she's lucky the kid isn't in one of those breathing tubes.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that happened quite a lot, and nobody really knew at the time why it happened. So Nucky's under a lot of pressure from the government, from his lady, from his work. I love how he got the liquor brought in from
Ireland.
Destroying Jim. Jimmy is now no longer the power.
Well, the thing
all
is,
the people, all the guys that got him to do this stuff, who talked him into trying to kill Nucky, who talked him into the liquor, who's trying to talk him into the heroin, all this stuff. Now they want to push him out and maybe possibly try to kill him too.
What's kind of interesting is the way they've set up Gretchen Moss' character, Jimmy's mom, she's like this Lady Macbeth pushing him to do all these things. The problem is he's not ready. And that's the problem. You know, everybody turned on him. He doesn't have his biological, you know, he never had the Commodore's respect. But he's just, he's a boy trying to play at being a man. And I can't help but see him go calling back to Nucky for forgiveness and to take down these, you know, former allies turned rivals.
Because mm-hmm. Nucky did say on Memorial Day or Veterans Day, say to Jimmy, "You don't know the game."
Mm-hmm.
Which reminded me of Game of Thrones. Jimmy does not know the game. He doesn't know the rules. But the point is, he doesn't even know what the point of the game is. And that he was being manipulated by everybody else. And mm-hmm. Nucky still, I do believe, with all his anger, still cares about him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is why I think that's why Jimmy is going to actually go back and try to, you know,
fix things.
Right. And one last thing before we get off of this show is Nelson, the FBI agent.
Woo! Agent Van Alden.
It is
Van Alden, that was awesome. Yeah.
It is so
I was
hard.
Not expecting that.
You knew that the blacks who were at the church event with the baptism had to be quiet about him killing the Jew because nobody would believe them. But now that they're needed, I love how everybody tells everybody, and now the attorney goes, guess who's talking to us? I love that the guy who is working for Nucky, getting paid, you know, cash into the table while the strike's going on, goes, I know someone. The idea that now Nelson can no longer be the witness for the government, that's going to screw up a lot of things for the government.
I was not expecting him to go on the run, though. That really surprised me.
That was a trip.
All right. Wrapping that one up.
Yep.
So
you guys are
super excited.
Oh, big thumbs up. Thumbs up.
I still haven't watched the pilot, so...
You're doing yourself a disservice. You need to watch this
Scorsese,
show.
Baby. He's on a
roll. I think it's on the level of Game of Thrones. Seriously.
Easily.
Big words.
It just took a season to get there.
Yes, it took, I'd say, three quarters of a season.
It takes a little while to get into it, but really, seriously, it's worth it. It's a great show.
It is.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Castle. And this week's episode... Marcia made a face. I'm like, what is that? I thought this was a good episode because it starts off, and usually I don't like the whole flashback thing they did, but I think that they did it well here because they literally had no memory of what happened. And Tom is over here sighing.
Because remember a few weeks ago when I said that The Hangover is becoming the new go-to episode for dramas?
This was
a variation on that.
Except that they didn't go out and get drunk at a
whatever.
They got drunk.
But still, it was a variation on that. And I just thought it was...
And they didn't have goofy tattoos and nothing crazy like that.
I just thought it was a so-so episode.
I thought it was great.
I was disappointed.
I liked it.
I really liked it.
I was disappointed.
This was my first time watching it, and I liked it a lot. I think that the writing is really smart and funny.
Yeah.
Almost all of the jokes work. And also, the jokes work very well with the staging of it.
Right.
So I think just a lot of the sexual innuendos and all of that stuff, I was cracking up and I appreciated on a, you know, it was kind of working on multiple levels. I think your point about the hangover thing is a valid one, but it was kind of nice that they were figuring out where they were at the same time their team was trying to figure out where they were, and you were kind of, as an audience member, we got to see them put the pieces together from kind of
both
inside
ends.
And outside.
Yeah. And it wasn't like The Hangover is like people have done something goofy and then these are the consequences. I don't feel like that was that at all. Like they were doing their jobs and then a criminal came and drugged them. So
it wasn't ridiculous.
Yeah. And they were in a potentially deadly situation.
Right.
It wasn't ridiculous.
So that changed also.
It wasn't ridiculous. It was part of the mystery that you were solving.
Right.
And so it was useful. It made sense with the plot. I liked it because there's that parallel action that Malik was talking about. And it gave, you know, Castle and
Beckett
a chance to be in a slightly different situation.
Somewhat intimate.
It's very intimate, and their relationship, the dynamics are like still kind of working themselves out. So it's kind of like force them together to see where they're at now and, you know, see what happens.
And I'm like, if I was handcuffed to somebody, I don't know if we could survive that, let alone. No, the question I have for you is, at what point did you guys figure out that it was an animal in that cage?
Oh, the tiger?
Yeah.
Because they were like, oh, it's sex trafficking. I was like, it's some sort of big animal. Like, for some, it was the hair.
Oh, you mean an animal instead of human trafficking?
Right, because it was when they showed the cage and they showed the hair. I was like, oh, it's hair. And I was like, that looks like animal hair. And I immediately thought it was an animal. And then I was waiting for them to catch up. However, I did like how they did that reveal. Like, he sticks his head in the wall. And that freaking
I thought at that point, I knew it was something like that. He stuck his head, it was something dangerous. So.
Here are three tangible things I didn't like about the... Additional things I didn't like about the episode. One, Martha and Alexis, not in... Pretty much
oh, they weren't in because they were like, oh, they're on vacation.
Didn't like that. Number two, as soon as we saw the woman in the cage, I knew, oh, she's going to be the perp, not the victim.
Well, because she had the creepy smile. Yeah. That was pretty obvious. She had I wasn't surprised either. It was a creepy smile.
And number three, I am so over the captain being anti-Castle. It's like, it's been almost half a year now.
Yeah, she's like, what has Castle gotten her into?
She needs to at least acknowledge he has some value to the department.
Well, that leads to my question. Why is a writer hanging out with a police officer?
That's the premise of the show.
Yeah, that's the entire premise of the show.
He's collecting information for a book. So he needs to write the character realistically, so he has to get inside someone's head.
And he's good friends with the mayor, who is good friends with the former
And he can get whatever he wants because he's
the first couple of years, I really enjoyed the show because that's what it was about. Now it's more the relationship between the two leads. Now I'm bored.
I like it.
I know, but it's not as good as it was.
I disagree.
I watch it, but I fast forward through probably half of it. But if you watch the first season or second season, then you'll see what
I actually think the show's gotten much better.
Well, it's a different show. It's you know, you can only take the novelty so far. For the first season or two, they're trying to figure out what their relationship is. Why is he? What is he? How is he going to fit in as a writer with the cops? And now you've already established that. Now it's like, how do they fit together in their relationship? And what do they come up against? You know, it's just the plots.
I think the writing is sharper now. I think the writing in the first season, they weren't quite sure what they were doing or how they all fit together, and I think they struggled. I think now that
she wasn't as good.
That's true. And now that they actually have gelled and they have their chemistry together, that works. And I think the writers are better now. And
I do like Esposito and the coroner, Lainey, being together.
Oh, yeah.
I like the way that because they have to work together, but they don't have to like it.
Right. Yeah, their fighting was pretty amusing as well. But yeah, I thought the episode was a really good one. It was different than what they normally do, because normally it's like they find a dead body and then you go through the steps of them trying to figure out. He always throws out some absurd obsession or idea about who killed it. Some kind of crazy assassins from what, you know, he comes up with something crazy because that's how he would write the story.
Didn't they say that? So what's your take on this one?
And he was like, you don't want to know. No, he said, there's no way that this ends well.
Yes.
So he was like, we're not going to go there. So
Not even the Disney version.
Right. Exactly. I thought that was pretty good. All right. So wrapping Castle up, mostly thumbs up on this one.
Mostly thumbs up.
All right. Next up, let's talk about The Closer.
I watched this just so we could talk about it, Olivia. I have not seen this show since first season.
Since first season?
Yeah.
So you have no idea what's going on.
I have a pretty good idea. I do listen to the podcast, you know. I see what you say about Mark Pellegrino as a lawyer. He's a lot of fun.
Oh, he is fantastic.
It's fun seeing him, especially when he usually plays like a bad guy.
Yes.
To see him have fun playing this.
Very, very flamboyant. Because he had that scarf and he was like, he just tossed the scarf over his shoulder.
I'm surprised he didn't say toodles. I thought the case was a little bit too easy.
Well, it wasn't. Usually, the closer's not necessarily about the case.
Here's the thing I didn't get. Okay, the photographer's sister.
Okay.
I'm like, she's attractive, but for all the men to be like, wow, she's that. No.
Oh, Buzz's sister.
Buzz's sister.
I was like, photographer.
Well, okay. You know, they had to have a Christmas episode, and, you know, for them, a Christmas episode, the last one they had was her parents.
Yeah, and I like her parents.
And it was the same thing. You know, it was a little more humorous.
But it was funny watching them jockey.
But still, I think they should have cast somebody a little prettier. I thought she was pretty, but they should have cast somebody, you know, like a Stana Katic, for them to all be like, wow, she's hot.
See, I think it would have been funnier if they had been doing it, but doing it on purpose to mess with Buzz. Then that would have been funny.
Right.
But they weren't.
They weren't. Yeah.
They were serious. I think she's above average. Fred Willard was Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is
like
pretty good.
Bad Santa, Fred Willard.
Yeah, he
style.
Was the definition of bad Santa. He literally showed up at the police station so drunk that he couldn't stand up, and he fell and knocked himself out.
And the fact that he kept groping her,
he kept groping every woman. He groped Brenda.
But he groped Buzz's sister like 3 times
in the episode. Oh my! And then he's like, "Oh, I got some lint from my from beard my on your breast. So here, let me get it off." Like, really? Ew! He was so creepy.
But it was so much fun to watch. What I liked is at the end you find out that, and so does Brenda, that Pope didn't pull a damn string.
Yes.
He's just been letting her think.
Think he did.
And it's her husband who took all of his savings and gave it. And
I couldn't believe he didn't say anything before.
Her husband?
Yeah.
No, because Fritz kept saying, don't think the Pope is, you know, your friend, he's your savior and all this, because he knows that Brenda is the kind of person, if you tell her something just like that, she gets pissed and goes and does the other thing. So he was trying to get her to realize it on her own.
Right, yeah, it didn't happen.
No. No. But now it will.
Yeah, now she's going to be mad at Pope for letting her believe that he got her that $25,000. But I have to give him credit. He did totally make it free. Mm-hmm. That was good.
I don't think he's giving back the $25,000.
No. But I mean, he was asking for more money. And he got it, so her lawyer is free. But
it's interesting how the people that are her not affiliates, but
coworkers,
colleagues.
The people who are watching her back have changed.
Oh, okay.
And who she can rely upon, half of them are no longer. And then you've got new people she can rely on, who I don't think she realized were actually taking care of.
Well, like Raider has actually got her back.
Extremely, but Raider's doing it for the number one reason, so a woman in power doesn't come off like crap. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, Raider definitely has her back. Her husband has her back. Pope has his own back.
Yes,
that's if true. If getting her back helps him, then cool, he'll do it.
If not,
I think...
Whatever.
Yeah.
He used to be the one that had her back when he thought he had a chance with her, but now mm-hmm. that he realizes he doesn't, he's like, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Just we'll wait and see how the next week goes and the next few weeks.
How many more episodes are left?
I don't know. They did like 20. They did like 20 episodes this season.
Yeah, they did. They gave it an extension so they could really work on the Raider character.
So, I'm excited. I still like that story. The ongoing story they have for the whole season, I think, really works.
Yes.
So that's why I'm watching it. All right, wrapping that one up. Let's talk about we got 2 Christmas episodes back to back. We have the Christmas episode for Warehouse 13, and I am going to on my podcast Here Eat Crow, which is I talked crap about Warehouse 13 for probably the last year about how awful this show was.
This season was actually pretty good,
and people kept telling me that this season was actually pretty good. So I went because I had watched season 1 and I didn't like it. Mm-mm. And people kept talking about this season was so great. And so I said, fine. And I went and I watched season 2 and then I watched season 3. And I have to agree, this season was actually pretty good. So I am now on board with Warehouse 13. And
well, let me take up your mantle then.
Okay. of hating Warehouse 13?
Yes. I'm not invested enough in it to hate it. I tried to watch it for this and found myself really uninterested. So maybe I'll do it on another time, but I'll take your place since you're now a believer. I'll be the non-believer.
I've been watching it pretty regularly.
A loyal opposition.
I've been watching it pretty regularly, but I wasn't overly impressed. It seemed a little, you know, hokey and whatever.
You mean
this episode?
I liked it for Pete. I think Pete did a really good job.
Pete's episode. I mean,
well, yeah, great, but I thought it rested on his shoulder. As opposed to if this had been a Micah episode, I would have had to shoot myself.
Yeah, Micah's a little annoying.
A little?
But she's cute, so it sort of makes
sense. Yeah, that doesn't do anything
for me. I think she should open her eyes real wide.
But I do like, I mean, I agree about your, you know, statement about the beginning of the series being less interesting. I like Allison Scagliotti's character and the guest stars from Eureka and, you know, I think the crossover that they did with the Neil Flynn, what's his name?
Fargo.
Yeah, I mean, the character. But anyway, Jinx for his duration. I think
Jinx
he's been
was
great.
Really good addition.
That was a good arc.
Yeah. That was a really good arc.
And
I like the Regents. They did the Regents this, and they got Kate Mulgrew to be
Kate
the mom.
Kate Mulgrew, I'm still not crazy about, but I think it's interesting to put her in there. So it's
you're
doing
just mad
because
she looks different than you're used to in your head.
No.
Okay.
What?
I don't know. Maybe you had a thing for Kate Mulgrew and she's gotten older.
No.
That's what I was going for.
I used to have a huge crush on her when she was Kate Columbo when I was in high school.
Oh, well. I think I found her from Rima Williams. But
this week, let's talk about the Christmas episode. Yep. And it was very much their version of It's a Wonderful Life. The only thing that bothered me about the episode was it took Pete too long to figure out what happened. I was like, dude, you work in the warehouse.
Right.
You know that there are artifacts that do crazy things. And if things are crazy, then there's probably an artifact.
Right.
You know, and so... Except that his thinking was that the other guy, I forgot that dude's name, the bad guy.
Roger Reese.
Yeah, what's his character's name?
I can't
remember. Anyway, he figured that guy got an artifact and rewrote history, but he was dead, so how could he have done that? You know what I mean? So it just took him too long to go, hey, maybe it was an artifact that I touched because I was just in the warehouse, you know?
Right. The fact that it was an alternate reality or something... Something happened to the reality should have been obvious to him that, you know, he's been dealing with all these artifacts. So.
Right. And that's pretty much what I was like, dude, you're in an alternate reality. Come on, catch up. So it just took him too long to figure that out. But once he did, I liked him. He's like, I'm not going to do this alone. I'm going to get my team back together. And I was like, oh, that's going to be interesting. But I liked him getting everybody on board with him. I thought that was pretty cool.
See, that's when the episode kind of woke up for me. Because for me, the weakest part of the show is always Pete and Micah.
Yes.
It's not just Micah alone. I really can't stand either Pete or Micah.
Ooh.
And for me, the show wakes up as soon as you get all the other characters in there because I love Artie and Claudia.
Yes.
I think the two of them are fantastic and Mrs. Frederick is wonderful. And I think if you just had a show with just them, it would be great. I would just be crazy about it every week. So as soon as they started bringing back those characters, it was like, yay, I'm on board.
Yeah, I was
so
like,
the show got much stronger as soon as they were all in it.
I was on board with you. Like, that was my opinion as well for season one. I thought that the only redeeming value was Artie and Claudia. But Pete actually grew on me. I don't know what happened, but it did.
As they've given the actor Eddie more stuff to do that's in line with what he's comfortable playing, the humor especially...
Well, I didn't think the humor was... No, I actually like him when they give him serious stuff. That's actually what's gotten my respect. Because I don't know...
The less crazy he acts, the less grating he is.
Yes. When he acts super crazy, I don't like him.
I'm talking about humor, well-written humor, not the crazy stuff.
Okay. Well, they write a lot of crazy stuff for him, and I don't think that works necessarily. And so when you actually have him... Like this one, he was super serious at the beginning of the episode, which I liked. So, anyway... I thought this was a really good Christmas episode for them. I didn't think it was... It didn't really get cheesy till the very, very end when everybody was like, oh, I love you, and I love you too. And he hugged Miss Fredericks. I was like, oh my God. Like, that was funny.
Well, you expect that in a...
The expression on her face was priceless.
Oh, so great.
You expect,
what are you doing?
You expect a little cheese in a Christmas episode, but I just think it was a little unbelievable that he couldn't get that, and you know, it was a little hokey... For me, but
I liked it. So anyway, wrapping that one up. Next up, we're going to talk about the Christmas episode of Eureka.
Much better Christmas episode, I thought. I loved the playing with the animated styles,
animated formats.
Yeah, that was so cool. It's
Snow Ninja.
I liked putting Zoe and Kevin together because when they moved her from series lead down to series regular with just recurring. This is the first time we've seen them because if they finally do get the sheriff and Allison together, they're going to be step siblings.
Right.
So
right.
I thought it was fun to see the kids kind of driving the action, and they just had fun with this.
Yeah.
And did you recognize Eddie Olmos as the dog?
Yes,
as
I did. I saw
also,
his name in the credits. And I couldn't figure out who
Jim
he was
Parsons as the Jeep.
Yes.
And Carter's Jeep actually complaining about how it's been abused.
Yeah. Carl.
Yes. The car
I have
gets
a name.
The car gets destroyed like every episode. His car gets
blown up, shot in his face.
Crazy stuff happens to the Jeep.
But he also talked in a little bit of a who was the uncle on Bewitched?
Uncle Arthur?
Yeah, he had a little bit of an Uncle Arthur kind of twang, which would have made sense for a cartoon series from the 60s, yes, and early 70s.
Well, they were going for that.
Which was just, I loved it. From the first moment it became animation, I just went, ooh, giggle, giggle.
I think, for me personally, I thought that the people working on the show had a lot more fun making the episode,
yes, they did,
than I necessarily had watching the episode. I thought it was a little too cheesy, but, I mean, I understand why you guys totally enjoyed it. And they did different styles. They did the claymation, they did anime at the end, they did, like, and I don't understand why Joe Morton's character, Henry, why did he have a pull string? What was that about? Like, every time he had to talk, he had to pull his own string?
Well, he said the reason was because when he's talking in real life, he never takes a breath to think first. He just starts rambling and rambling and rambling, and this forced him to slow down and think before he talked.
And then I like the fact that he pulled the string and went, let me think, no. Like, he... That was pretty funny.
Unfortunately, because Sci-Fi screwed up the sound broadcast on some of the... I guess whoever had, satellite transmission. I was not able to hear anything that was going on. The only thing that I can comment on was visually what was going on. And so, one of these days I'll be able to actually hear the dialogue, but visually I really appreciated what they did because I thought they really got the styles beautifully. Oh, yeah. I mean, after a while I got frustrated and started fast forwarding, but I stopped when I saw them do the little anime bit. And I thought that was brilliant. That is very hard to do correct. And they just got that down pat. That just looked gorgeous.
Not only the...
Unfortunately, I couldn't hear what they were saying, but it looked fantastic.
I thought it was funny. Kudos
to them for just getting the styles down beautifully.
I thought it was funny because they commented on each time that style changed. They're like, oh, what are we doing now? You know, look at you, in your outfit the look of the characters changed, and they commented on themselves.
Absolutely. And what they also did on the anime at the end is, if you listened, everyone else around them was talking in Japanese. The music was Japanese. Yeah. It was, really, really good. I loved how they were changing from what they were, which to me is Dudley Do-Right animation, to Peanuts, to Futurama.
Oh, yeah. And then they did South Park.
South Park.
And then they did The Simpsons.
I saw that little quick bit. Yeah,
yeah. I love it. Of Joe, the Bluebirds of Happiness. She missed them when they were gone. There were so many damn in-jokes. I thought it was, the best episode of the season. Just because it made me laugh hysterically. I loved it. Just, yeah.
All right. Thumbs up, I guess. Mine's thumb sideways, but everybody else really loved it. All right, next up is Psych. It's not a Christmas episode. They had their cult episode, which I feel like Gus is... They treat him like a clown too much. Like, this was just one step too far in the clown territory. I didn't believe it.
Well, he's the straight man, so it's hard for... I mean, he's not completely straight man, but... It's harder when he plays the really ridiculous
character. When he plays the buffoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but he was too far before. Like, I didn't believe it. It just, it didn't work for me. And I mean, yes, he's the one that always is chasing the girl. That's true. But it just, it felt false, And to the point where he's going to join this cult to try to get with a girl, really? Like, No one else has comments?
No, I agree with you. It's like... The unbelievability of everybody wanting the sister on the closer, Gus. It was all rolled into Gus thing. Oh, she's really good. It's like she's not that good looking, and she's freaking nuts.
Well, she was really nuts. So I thought that made her.
Yes, she's in danger, but
yeah. And then they were. It was just too much. I didn't like the episode. Actually,
I didn't care for it either.
That's what I was wondering why everybody was quiet. I was like, oh, nobody liked it.
I liked it okay, but you're right. It was pushing the boundaries of what was, it made it difficult to really believe and like the...
I fell asleep plot. The first time I watched
pushing
it.
Pushing the boundaries of reality and believability, even for Psych.
Even for certain...
And that's hard.
Further, that's true.
That's really hard. But
What was the illusion this week? It was... They usually are connecting it to some other TV show, and I'm trying to think. What was... Was there...
No.
I can't think of anything. Anyway, I didn't really like it. The only thing is, they made quips of... Not the cop. What's the cop's name?
Carlton.
Carlton.
Lassie. Thank you. I was trying to say it's like his name begins with L. His comments about the hippies were funny. Like,
yeah, but they got old after a while.
Yes, they did. Yes, but he was funny. And I like that they gave him a flower and he threw it down. Like, that was about it. That was the most comedy of the episode. But maybe next week we'll get a better episode of Psych. But I thought this was one of their low points. All right, wrapping that one up. Next up is Modern Family. And this was their Christmas episode. And thumbs up.
Yes, way up.
Malik, I'd like to hear from you since this was your first Modern Family.
Well, that was the theme playing here. My first time watching a lot of these shows. And yeah, it was my first time watching Modern Family after having been told I should have been watching it all along. And I'd say I'd agree. It took a while to get what the show is, but after I got into that, I think they do it really well, both in terms of the acting and the writing. And the execution, it just moves right along. So I enjoyed it a lot.
For a new person, who's your favorite character that you like? I know you probably don't know anybody's names yet, but
I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I thought they all worked well together. They had really distinct personalities.
Yes.
So I didn't have a favorite. I enjoyed them all. I thought they even did, you know, kids always steal the scenes. And the little girl on there, she was really interesting. And you could see when it worked in to have her just deliver a line here and there. And that worked. It was better than... I'll compare it to Rudy in the Cosby Show. You know, you could see her looking at her coaches sometimes when she was delivering the lines. This little girl was more advanced.
What are other people? Open it up.
Oh, I liked the dad. I mean,
Phil or Jay?
Phil. Sorry. Phil, because okay. How Phil just wants to, yay, get the family together, the happiness.
Express Christmas!
Oh my God. And then he goes to get Jay the one gift he knows that it because he's still trying to get Jay to say, I love you or I like you. And he's thinking, okay, a Mickey Mantle card. Off of Craigslist. Like, none of us have ever wondered about how many serial killers are on Craigslist. And he brings Manny with him, who's already freaking out that he's going to get kidnapped.
He thinks he's going to be kidnapped, right?
You know, and so Phil, you know, talks about, you know, here, I've got money, and the guy wants more, and then he says, listen, I'll take the butterball. And Manny goes, I'm tired of this. And he takes out his mom's taser and accidentally tases Phil. And I love that, how his physical, he's like, excellent, mint condition, excellent condition, fair condition, garbage. And I throw this out at the absolute end, after everything is done, and he is putting he's doing the decoration on the tree, with the couple that have the kid,
Mitchell and Cameron,
with Cam, and he gets zapped again. You can see the little spark of electricity, and he hits Cam in a way that Cam's face goes, huh? Oh, I love the actor who plays Phil. He's just such perfection.
Ty Burrell. He's
good. I forgot. I actually did watch this episode. I forgot that I do, because I don't watch it regularly. But all those things you're talking about, like, oh, yeah, that's right. And my favorite parts, I think, were Manny and the daughter that went shopping.
Kaylee. Yeah.
Those were the best characters in this episode, I thought.
Yeah, her shopping skills were scary. Yeah.
No, it wasn't her shopping skills. It was her ability... to very sweetly take things away from people, whether it was a guy and she's trying to show her breasts, or it's a gay guy where she's just, can I please hold your toys for you? How did she get the shirt off that other person?
Who knows?
She has her knocked ways. Him out in the break room.
I'm wondering, because, you know, from the back, you couldn't tell if it was a guy or a woman walking
The whole point is it doesn't matter.
She got that shirt off.
It doesn't
that
matter.
Person.
That I like the fact that every once in a while, they'll look at the camera. Like, they'll break that, yes. That fourth wall. Or third wall, yes. Every once in a while, because whatever wall there is that they break, well, they broke it. So I just like that little bit where when she gets the idea that she's going to steal the shirt, she takes a moment, she looks at the camera, and she's like, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And then she goes and does it. I was like, that's brilliant. It's really subtle. It's really nice. And they don't do it very often, but I like that every once in a while they do it.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments was when Phil's leaving and says the Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen. It's like, hey, that worked out pretty well.
That was good. And his obsession with Gloria is so bizarre. Like, that's his father-in-law's wife, and he always makes comments on how gorgeous she is around his own wife, and she's always slapping him upside the head. She's like, yeah, not now, Phil. He's like, oh, right. Did I say that out loud? Like, yes, you did.
Now, it's all levels. It's really good. There's not one actor who doesn't keep up the pace. There's not one writing of one specific section of the show. I really don't see it being an A story, a B story, and a C story. It's all equal. It's all part of each other.
Right.
And it's just, it's wonderful.
The secret to writing for that show is they do three A stories. And you still might have a subplot within one of those. And they usually kiss each other.
Oh, I was like, what?
The plots or the characters?
No, actually, not the characters. I'm talking about the characters.
Yeah, the plot lines
kissing,
usually do
intersect
kissing.
Some. Cam and, what's his name, kiss once in a while. But that's
Cam
what
and yeah. Oh, no, yeah. They show it.
Yeah, that's about it. That's the only kissing you really see.
Yeah, but I like the fact that the Christmas tree fell off the car, and of course it was Gloria that ran over the tree.
and how she's always, you know, just look forward, don't look back, don't look back. She threatens people with her, you know, what we did back in Colombia. Yeah. Not that I threatened you, but it's just
she's scary though. She can be scary, like that the time when she was killing the rats with the shovel, and then they saw that she had killed a bunch of rats with the shovel, and then she just picked up the shovel, and both her husband and her son just backed up. They were like, "Yeah, whatever you want."
I am from Colombia.
But talk about a buffoon character, though. Phil is the ultimate buffoon. You know, he's everything that he does turns to dust, and you know, he can't do anything right, so.
But he does do
everything
right.
He doesn't do it well, yes.
He might not do it well, but you know what? He does do it right, and at the end, everyone is happy.
Yeah.
All right.
No, well, I think he doesn't do it right, but everyone's happy anyway. Everyone loves him, despite the fact that he's a buffoon. Because he means well.
He does mean well. All right. Thumbs up. That was one of the best episodes, I think, of the week, of everything that I watched.
Yep.
I think it equaled for me with Eureka. They both made me giggle out loud.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk about American Horror Story for a minute. All right, Allison.
I thought that it was actually a really good episode. They really moved the story forward, and they had a very surprising reveal. I think for people who have been watching it, there has been probably some feeling that certain things weren't right with Violet. That all things weren't quite the way they seemed, and there's sort of a question mark hanging over her, and they kind of revealed that. They resolved that in this episode, by finally coming to grips with the fact that, yes, as a matter of fact, when she took all those pills all those episodes ago, she didn't have quite the happy ending that we thought she did. And in fact, Tate tried to have her commit suicide in this episode. It turned out to be an easy way to let her out. And when she balked at that and tried to escape from the house and realized that no matter how many times she tried to get out of the house, she just went around in circles and found herself back in the house again. He got her to calm down and said, look, just follow me. And after I show you something, you can go anywhere you want. And just trust me for a moment. She did that. And he led her through a crawl space to finally discover her body, where it's been since she tried to commit suicide so many weeks ago.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. And she broke down, and he told her that he tried to save her. He really did. But she threw up only a few of the pills and then died in his arms. And he's been trying to protect her from that all these weeks. And her parents have been, in fact, just interacting with her ghost all this time. And she's been going about her daily life thinking she's alive, and she's really not.
And so, quick question. So was this one of the best episodes that they had?
This was a really, really good episode. That moment where she comes face-to-face with her body, and it's a horrible image, just this gasping little girl, you know, this corpse of a girl covered with flies, lying in the crawl space. And her, she breaks down when she sees it. And it's this horrible realization that you've been seeing her dead all this time. It's a terrible moment. And they had that, and that was a reveal. And another thing was that another character who we've been seeing for a long time now, this character of this burnt man, whose name is actually escaping me now, but he's the next door neighbor who's been coming in and out, and his background and how he got burnt and all of that has been up in the air for a long time, and his background was finally revealed, and all of that was very integral in this story. So they moved that story along, and they took care of what was going to happen with his character. So all of that really is moving forward, and it was a big episode. It was a big episode. So
all right.
We are now two episodes from the season ender.
All right. So you are the last one hanging on, keeping us apprised of the show. All right.
Now I still don't know how they're going to stretch this into a second season, but you know this has been a strong season for this show.
Okay. All right, next.
I beg to differ, but
okay, yeah. We have people over here motioning and making symbols and signs, but we're not going to talk about it. All right, next up, let's talk about Big Bang really quickly.
Meh.
Okay, that's really quick.
Okay, I'm disappointed. You know, it started out, I didn't like the show because it was making fun of the
geeks.
Nerds.
They weren't, though.
Yeah, they were.
Not really.
Then it became better, and then it became and then it became better, and I was so disappointed with this last one. It was just the story of the guy who beat you up when you were a kid, he changed, but no, he didn't change.
I think the whole problem is the episode centered around Leonard. Anytime an episode centers around Leonard, it has problems. Leonard's character is not that interesting, just my personal opinion. So I actually think that was more of the problem than what the actual plot was. I think if they had actually had it with any of the other characters being the one that had been bullied, it would have been better. Mm-hmm.
I say you're both right. I think the problem was that's such a routine plot line. I didn't care about that. And if it's dealing with Leonard, not in relationship to the others, that's a bad idea.
Right.
Because even though he may have top billing on the show, we know Sheldon's the breakout star.
Right.
This season's been all over the place. They've had... last week's I thought was hilarious.
Right.
And this week's I thought was...
It was I agree.
But this season's been wildly... I thought seasons 3 and 4 were really consistently good. I think 5 is all over the place. Translation, I'm not buying the Blu-ray.
I would agree with you on that. I thought that this episode was rather weak because the bully guy was such an obvious bully. What I actually think this good storyline was, because now you have the women have their own plot.
Mm-hmm.
And theirs was the reverse of Leonard's storyline, where Penny realizes that she was a bully in high school, and for some reason she never knew that. But they pointed out to her that she was the bully, and so then she makes a bunch of calls trying to apologize to people, and nobody wants to hear it. So I thought that was actually...
Bitch.
I actually thought that was a good counter. And in that case, the B line was actually better. So then she tries to do something good, altruistic. But every altruistic thing they give her to do, she's like, oh, no, that's too much work. Nah, that doesn't sound like fun. Like, so she's obviously not a really altruistic person. And she really doesn't want, not really, to do... stuff like that. And then as they're trying to give away clothes, she ends up stealing clothes. So all of that I thought worked. So that storyline was a good one as counter to the Leonard one, which was a boring one.
Yeah, then it's an extremely boring.
Okay. So wrapping.
That's a quickie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, we don't want to just talk about something that we don't enjoy for a great length of time. So let's, up next, let's talk about Person of Interest.
Woo.
And this was a good episode this week.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I like the fact that they involved one of the, you know, secondary or whatever, I guess primary, but I mean, subsidiary character.
Supporting character.
Yeah, supporting character into the main main plot, because it brought the two main principals to her rescue and made them sort of bonded them in a way going through the experiences. Like, you see how much what's his name cares about, you know, the Jim Caviezel character cares about her now. Like, she's on, you know, even though they're sort of on opposite sides, they're really still on the same side.
They're on the same side. She's still a good person.
Yeah.
And his thing is, he wants to help innocent and good people, and she's one of those people.
And maybe this gave him the ability to show her that, you know, I'm really, you know, a good guy, and I'm trying to help these people.
Yeah.
I'll even help you, who are out to get me.
She thinks he's an out of control vigilante. She knows that he's trying to help.
He is an out of control vigilante.
Okay, true. I mean, like, okay, she's not delusional.
He's
or anything.
The star of the show, yeah. But she's a police officer. She's,
right.
She is sworn to uphold the law.
Right. So she knows he tries to do good stuff, but this is the first time that she's benefited from it.
Right.
So I agree with you, and I like the little play where he didn't wear a suit because she always recognizes him from his suit. So he wore like a leather jacket to, like, that was his disguise so that she wouldn't see him as he was following her around and trying to help her. So that was all pretty good.
Hidden in plain sight.
Yeah. And if you guys saw the preview for next week, or anybody see it?
I did.
Yeah.
The preview was interesting because now that they've got this new relationship where they kind of think they can trust each other, these other guys that are his enemy are coming to her and be like, oh, he trusts you, so you're going to help us catch him.
Right. Well, I think that's how shows grow, is that they start off with relationships between two main characters, and then they mix up the relationships, and they poke into the relationships of other characters and different combinations.
Yeah, I'm not arguing. I think that's a great idea.
And I think it'll be interesting to see how those two characters develop their relationship. Yeah.
I actually want to see them in the same room having a conversation because we haven't done that yet.
I think it was only a matter of time before they ended up on the same side anyway, because they're basically after the same things.
Right.
But they can't quite be on the same side because, like Tom said, that he's a vigilante and she's a policeman.
And she's a by-the-book cop.
By the book,
She does not play that.
I think at some level, because they are after the same goals, that they will be sort of grudgingly working together.
Right.
Sure.
You know.
Well, it's got the vibe of early Batman Commissioner Gordon relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. So. I could see that. I mean, Malik is laughing here because
I just love the analogies he uses.
the series was created by Jonathan Nolan, who's written the last couple of Batman movies.
Yeah, and he is a
not
Batman
that far away.
I'm not protesting. I'm just enjoying it.
The Taraji P. Henson really. It was good to see an episode centered on her and the fact that she gets to, she's not just a pretty face, she's a great actor. I mean, she's been Academy Award nominated. And, you know, it's good to see this cast starting to gel, especially the unique nature of the show. It's an anthology, but it's got these continuing through lines. And as they develop the backstory, the whole thing with Elias.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. I want them to bring Paige Turco back because she was great. Like the female Reese from a few weeks ago.
Oh, right, yeah. She was a good character.
Yeah.
So, all right, wrapping that up, I think it's a great show. I'm really enjoying it. I cannot wait for new episodes. It is. Well, you're just laughing.
Because last week or 2 weeks ago, you were like, I don't know, the show's going a little downhill.
Well, no, I didn't like that episode. Okay. And I said it was very specific. I felt like Jim Caviezel was literally high when he did the episode.
He's not high.
I know, but in that particular episode, that's how he rubbed me. But I liked the show initially, and I still like the show.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Next up is Community. This episode was very much, the writers are saying, we hate Glee. And we're going to tell you how much we hate Glee.
We're going to do a whole episode.
We're going to do a whole episode about how much.
Making fun of it.
Oh my God, because it was like, they basically have this faux Glee club show up and do Christmas carols, and they make fun about it. Then they have them arrested, and then all of them all try to commit suicide because Glee was the only thing in their lives. And then the guy who runs Glee Club tries to recruit them, and they say no, but then he catches each one of them, and it becomes Attack of the Body Snatchers, because each one of them gets possessed individually. Like, if they get alone with a Glee member, they get converted. And so they have to then try to capture each person, and then when it was the last, the last person realizes they're the only one that hasn't been converted. They do the whole thing at the end of Body Snatchers where it's like, ah, they do the pointing as I'm showing and you guys can visually see on my podcast.
That sounds fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, they made fun of the Attack of the Body Snatchers.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Like, thank you. They made fun of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Attackers of the Killer Tomatoes.
Right, thank you. And then they made fun
and
the 50 of...
the 50-foot woman.
And the 50-foot... Oh, Attack of the 50-foot woman. Thank you. But it was a good mockumentary, and I have to say the rap between Abed and Troy was actually pretty funny. I like their rap song. So
they did battle?
Yeah, well, they did it together, and they're like... One of them did the first verse rap, and then the second one did the second verse rap, and that was actually pretty amusing. And so they did some musical numbers, and the cast of Community can sing.
Can sing, yeah.
So it actually ended up being their musical episode while they mocked musicals.
Right. I love musical episodes anyway when they're not musical shows because it's just kind of a different twist and it's fun. I mean,
if they can sing,
well, if yes,
yeah. I mean, the Buffy episodes and stuff were fun, and when they did musicals and
Sanctuary was hard.
Well, I wasn't referring to that one, but but anyway, whether they really don't like Lee or not, or they were just making fun of it because they do like it, it's a possibility too.
No, I think they don't.
It was very much like we hate Glee.
All these Glee things very well, and
watched the show,
right? But if you watch a show, does that mean you can still hate it even though you watch it?
Yes.
Oh yes. Okay.
Yes, you can. Because there are ways that you can. There are shows that, like, they like Doctor Who. You can tell they like Doctor Who. Inspector Space Time is their homage to Doctor Who, and they drop it in like every other episode. Abed is always watching it, and they do little bits.
But they make fun of it too.
They do, but they do it in a fun way, loving way, where you know they like Doctor Who. Versus the Glee was we hate Glee.
Okay.
So.
Well, I think there's certainly.
Why are sectionals so important?
I know! That was the greatest line ever! And they were like, why? It's like, because if we do this, we'll get to sectionals. And they're like, what the heck is sectionals? Who cares?
Regionals.
They're like.
I thought they said sectionals.
It was regionals. It was, right. He was like, what are regionals? And then they have the guy that, like, explains. Like, because if we get regionals, then we go to semi-regionals, then we go to semi-regional regionals, and then we go to quarter regional semifinals. And you're just like, what? So all of that was really pretty good.
I'm surprised they didn't say, and we can drag the storyline out the whole season. I mean, here.
So all of that was all pretty good. I thought that was a really good Community.
Yeah.
Thumbs up. Next, we want to talk about Burn Notice. And this was the penultimate episode. And I liked it. I mean, I really think that it felt like we're burning on all cylinders. Stuff is happening. Whenever Michael sends his mother home, or sends her out of the country, or sends her somewhere else.
Elsewhere.
He sends his mother away. That means a bunch of stuff is about to hit the fan. So, at the beginning of this episode, his mom... Because the big twist was last week, was you find out the guy that's been blackmailing Michael all season actually killed his father.
Anson.
He's like, he kills his father, and he goes, and blah, 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 and I killed your father... And you're welcome. I was like, what? And so now Michael is kind of like, yeah, my father was a jerk. I hated him, but I think I might have to kill you. You know, so that was pretty interesting. And the mom basically told him to kill the guy. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know what? I'm going to go out of here so you don't have to worry about me. Now go kill this dude. So it's all building up to that, and he's getting information, and I like that they have the guy, I call him Uriel, because that was his name on Supernatural. What was his name on Burn Notice?
Oh, Vaughn.
Vaughn, thank you. I never learned to call him Vaughn, I always called him Uriel. but I liked that meeting, because it looked like he had Michael over a barrel, and there was no way Michael was going to be able to get what he needed, and so Michael's like, okay, let's turn this into a threat. So that was all good. He got the information he needed and actually scared the dude. That was awesome. So I thought the episode was good. Anybody?
I thought the resolution, the Greg Henry, the... why can't I think of his name? Kobe Bell's character.
Oh, yeah. When he basically gets himself shot, killed.
Well, basically, because he knows he's terminal, he's
right.
Like...
Jesse.
Jesse's former colleague basically... lets himself be killed so he can put this guy away because he knows he's going to die anyway, so he might as well do some good. I thought that was an interesting twist.
I was surprised they did it.
Yeah, I was too.
Because they hardly ever kill anybody on this show. So and especially it was a client. It was a guy that they were working to help him. And the mission that they tried to do totally didn't work, which never happens. So, like, they got in the middle of the mission, it went foobar, and then they had to get out, and they just were like, okay, we're getting out with our lives, and we just couldn't do it. And so the guy was like, you know what? I'm not giving up. I'm going to set this guy up to kill me. And you can either help me, or I'm just going to set it up and hope that it works right. And so then the mission became to create a scenario where this guy literally kills their client, and they have to make sure the cops are there to catch him. Like, so I was like, wow, that's kind of dark.
It's Burn Notice.
I know, but I mean, usually Burn Notice can be kind of a light show, though. So it was pretty dark.
I want this Anson arc to be over. I find him as threatening as, like, a root canal.
As a root canal? No, just... Root canals can be threatening, man.
We talked about the actor a couple weeks ago, and the more that they tried to make him this menacing threat, the more I don't buy it.
Well, that's because now they have him, the whole psychologist thing. I think that I actually bought it once you found out that he's been watching Michael all this time and he actually killed his father. I was like, whoa. Like, I actually found that to be pretty threatening. So, I kind of disagree with you on that.
Yeah, I just don't. I think that they're... The choice of actor playing that role kind of...
Definitely cross-type.
It's cross-type, but it just makes me not interested. I mean, I literally... Episode or two.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's going to be killed next week.
I hope so.
I'm pretty sure that's where they're going.
I will pay the grand sum of $1 if USA does that next week.
As long as he doesn't get killed in the midst of a fight scene in a steam room with towels on, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Did you say as long as?
As he does not.
Does not.
Aw. Okay. Because then I might actually watch the show with Eugene. Okay, never mind.
So, I thought it was thumbs up. I can't wait for the finale.
Good episode.
Okay, good episode.
They got to move this arc, though, man.
Yeah, they're moving it. I think they're moving it. That's why I'm excited. All right.
It hasn't been my favorite arc, though, no.
Oh, seriously.
I think that they're using Jesse and all those guys a lot more this part of the season. So, I'm enjoying it. But anyway, all right, wrapping that up. Next up, let's talk about Grimm. And I know we have technically two episodes, but the first one was okay. I think the second one was better.
I agree.
So, I was wondering why did they just kind of blew off that first episode on Thursday.
What was the first one?
The first one was the rats.
The Pied Piper.
The Pied Piper. The Fiddler and the Rats. Yeah, I was like, that wasn't really that interesting, and I didn't really care about the kid or
they were testing it in the old Prime Suspect slot. It did not do very well.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to find out if it would be a difference between a Friday to a Thursday.
And the answer is no.
Yeah. Friday's the better place to live.
Right, and it wasn't a very good episode to test anyway. It wasn't a good episode.
It wasn't. But
I think because they figured it had teenagers, like almost the entire guest stars were all teenagers, they were like, oh, this will be great. For the demographic.
For a 10 p.m. show.
Nah. No. Anyway. But so, I just like, let's just talk about the Big Bad Wolf. Not the... Three Bad Wolves. Yeah, that's the name of it?
Yeah.
So, it was they reversed the story where the pig goes and kills three wolves.
Well, it was Porky's Revenge.
Maybe. Yeah, it was Porky's Revenge. Yeah.
it was still the same because it was that you find out that the wolves, the...
Family feud.
Their feud between the pigs and the wolves has been going on and on.
Like, it's really...
Well, you don't have to start with the Big Bad Wolf.
I just have two thoughts. One is this would be some really tough pigs.
Yes. They are. Yes. Yes.
And two are these the same pigs that the birds are angry at.
No.
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 No, this is the story of...
Angry birds.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Okay. No, but this Grimm is doing the fairy tales. And it's the whole Big Bad Wolf, and he goes to the three pigs' houses and blows their house down and all that stuff.
He blows their house up.
Yeah, well, actually, the reverse of the pig actually blows up the wolves' houses, and you find out it's all a family feud because one of the wolves went and killed the brothers of one of the pigs. She went and just killed two of
butchered
them. Just
them.
Really butchered them for no reason. She was bored on a Saturday night and decided to kill some pigs. And so it was his brother, so then he decided he's going to kill her brothers. So he blew up her brothers' houses.
Mind you, her brothers were okay. When he bought his pork, he bought it from a store.
Right.
He didn't go out hunting, but he got killed. The sister, who was the one who did the killings, the one of the pigs, the one who really was the evil sibling, is the one that's at the end is still alive.
Right.
But you find out a lot more about Nick.
Right. That was the point.
Yeah, that was the point. To find out about him, to find out why he became a vegetarian. How hard it really is for him that it's
Nick's the cop.
Yeah.
Not Nick, I'm sorry.
You're talking about his sidekick.
Eddie. Eddie has been talking about how hard it is for him to not do his instincts and how he has to be careful. Well, it seems he goes to a 12-step program for it. He's a vegetarian. He tries all these different things.
Pilates.
His clock collection, all of that. But which all also
that keeps him calm and it keeps him under control. And you could tell what I thought was really good was when Nick calls him and is like, oh, I need your help. He's like, you don't understand how thin control I have right now. And I thought that actor did a great job.
I like that actor a lot. I like, I don't remember his name, but
Silas Weir Mitchell.
I've seen him in other things and I really like him.
24.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting way to express, you know, the nature of the character of the beast or whatever as an addiction.
Right.
You know, and he's fighting the addiction. That's kind of cool.
Right. It is also, going back to Nick, Juliet, the refrigerator died at the beginning of the show.
Oh, right.
So she calls a refrigerator repairman. He comes out, you know, it's the usual, you know, crack of the ass kind of joke. And then when he turns around and he sees Nick, he freaks out.
He's like, it's a Grim, oh my God.
That's it. He realizes, he can tell it's Nick because he loses control. Nick can tell what he is. And he gets out of there and says, you know, I've never done anything to you. I'm a good person. Please don't kill me. You learn with a lot of these different people and even the episode that was shown on Thursday night you still realize that a lot of these characters, a lot of these
creatures
are peaceful but still scared to death of Grimm, because except for him, all the other Grimms would have killed them off.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't raised as a Grimm, he doesn't really see the reason to kill off anyone unless they do something wrong. And that now at last they're starting to get into that point of the story that he will go both ways, that there are good creatures, there are bad creatures, and just like he won't kill off everybody. And that's what I see Eddie being, is his person who's going to be able to be the one to go up to them and go, he's not going to kill you, at least not now.
he did that.
Yes, but it's going to be even more and more. But I like how Juliet all of a sudden is starting to figure out
Something's going on.
So I think,
and of course, the moment she figures out she's going to get killed, you do realize that, right? she's living on borrowed time,
or at least
put in peril at some, you know.
Yeah, she's. I think she's going to die.
I think she's.
Kinda... Now, one thing I do find interesting is that the chief of police, who we know that we don't know if he's a good guy, a bad guy.
We know he's a bad guy.
But how much of a bad guy is he? We don't really know a lot. Yet, we had Lieutenant Orson, who was the fire chief.
Right.
Who was doing the arsons, who was one of the three pigs.
Right.
Can the police chief see all these characters?
Yeah.
Also,
he knows
that
who they
he
are.
Knows all these people.
Right.
That means that they're in every single level of the government.
Probably.
Yes.
Correct.
So I think this is going to be, if the show continues on and gets better and better and better, I'm looking forward to this. I'm actually very much enjoying it. However, it's for those who think it's not going to be Buffy, but it's going to be good writing. But you keep looking at him going, you know, this guy's so not the Slayer.
No, he's a totally different approach. I mean, he's not. Well, the first season of Buffy, was she the Slayer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did she jump in and kick ass?
She just went, but the thing is, initially her perspective was anything that was a monster, she killed it. It wasn't until later that she understood there were grays.
The monsters,
right.
Because she was a teenager, she wasn't an adult.
Well, it was also how she was being taught.
They taught her that. They taught her if it's a monster, you kill it. And that's how she went. And then later on, she figured out there were shades of gray.
Right. Nick doesn't have anybody teaching him. He's figuring it out himself.
Right.
And he automatically assumes the shades of gray because of him being a cop.
The one thing that bears note from the Thursday episode is the fact that the partner went out with the
Sergeant.
With the creature.
Okay. Right, because she's trying to get intel.
Yeah.
And they've got to move the story arc faster.
That's true.
Good. I mean, it's...
Because we don't know what the police chief is doing.
Glacially paced.
He's doing something, but we don't know what it is, and we haven't known that for weeks. So, yeah, let's give us some movement on that. All right, wrapping that up, that's it for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed. And remember, if you want to send us some feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. We are on getthepointradio.com and kryptonradio.com. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
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 Ciao.